Many Iowans have been battling swarms of gnats for the past few weeks, and a lot of us are dreading the swarms of mosquitoes to come. This hour, we'll get an insect update. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis will be here to tell us where all those gnats have been coming from and when they'll be going. He'll also do his best to predict what kind of mosquito season we'll have this year. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Donald will answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be along shortly to answer your questions. But first, we're going to talk about bugs. A lot of people have had a lot of questions about bugs lately, and Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis is here with us today. And we'll start with the first bugs, Donald, and then we'll move on to later bugs.
Okay.
And a lot of people in a lot of different parts of the state have been saying, where did all these gnats come from?
Well, gnat is such a broad term that it covers maybe hundreds of different kinds of insects, but generally we're talking about tiny insects. They are flying insects. Some gnats are called fruit flies. Some gnats have other things, the titles attached to them. What we see in the springtime, and we have seen this now two springtimes in a row, is a specific type of gnat called the fungus gnat. And as far as I know, that's what people on the eastern side of Iowa have been talking about. And we've had several calls about swarms of gnats, little dark insects that are barely big enough to see. They hover around your head. They get in your nose. They fly up into your eyes. Mostly those are fungus gnats. And the name tells you pretty much most of what you need to know, and that is fungus gnats come from fungus, and fungus comes from damp areas, and that describes pretty much most of the state in this rainiest of springtimes.
So that makes sense that they would be around. Why aren't they everywhere?
I don't know. And I think a certain combination of environmental conditions, moisture in the soil, the amount of decaying organic matter, maybe standing water but not flooding, moving water, and then finally temperatures. We had a lot of cool days earlier this spring that probably held back their development in some areas. So it might be the amount of sunshine that fell on muddy soil. There's too many variables to know. We can raise these fungus gnats in our house if you make your house plant a soggy, decaying organic matter, the soil around your houseplant, if you make that a soggy, decaying organic matter, you can raise these inside, but not everybody is able to raise them inside. So I think this is just one of those variations in life that we just have to shrug our shoulders and hope that it passes quickly.
And how quickly does it usually pass?
Well, our experience last year was that it was a few weeks, and we've been a couple of weeks into the phone calls here on campus already, primarily from eastern Iowa, but we have heard from the center of the state. We've heard a couple of calls from western Iowa, people reporting these gnats that are swarming around them. So I guess I can be optimistic and say the worst is over, but I've been wrong on my insect predictions before, and I could be again.
And on a practical level, they don't seem to care about DEET. You can't put on bug spray and keep them away. And there have been raging debates about all the many remedies that you can use. And I've seen people riding bicycles in face masks to keep them out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. Do you have the expert's guide to keeping gnats away from your head?
No. Grin and bear it, but grin with your mouth closed, I guess, is the answer that I would come up with here. That they're not interested in us for food reasons. They don't bite. They can't sting. They don't lay their eggs on us or do anything useful. They just sort of swarm around, and there's so many of them, and they all have to be someplace, and they will be hovering around your head. But no, they are not using cues of that are impacted by DEET. so they're not going to be affected by traditional mosquito repellents. And when you get into home remedies, everybody sooner or later believes something worked for them at least once. And they will spread the word that, no, no, the answer is vinegar. And the next person says, no, no, the answer is diluted bleach or it's vanilla. These home remedies appear to work for some of the people some of the time. We just can't find evidence that they're going to work for most of the people most of the time.
All right. And since it's been at least 2 weeks, I think about three by my count.
Okay.
They should be going soon. And honestly, I've felt like they're easing up, although, again, maybe that's my vanilla extract.
It could be that whatever is working for you, keep doing it. But this is a temporary problem. We always have some fungus gnats, but somehow the combination of standing water and warm temperatures that followed the cool spell brought all of them at once.
All right. Now, the next question. People with all of this water we've had this spring, people are bracing themselves for plagues of mosquitoes, and I've seen a few. In the last couple of days, Richard was mentioning earlier he was in the yard last night and saw a lot. What do you think?
Well, I think two seems like a lot because last year we had none. We made it through the summer of the drought with hardly any mosquitoes at all. So just having a couple now seems like a terrible inconvenience and it seems like a bunch of them. What happens next depends on the weather as far as the mosquito population building. We came out of last summer with very low population numbers. We've made it through the winter with incredibly low numbers. Then it was cool in the spring. They didn't get a chance to develop because the temperatures were cool. And now it will depend on how long the water remains standing. Mosquitoes don't breed in the floodwaters that are racing past your front porch. After the flood recedes and we have these temporary impoundments, these pools of water where the water stagnates and stays still, those are the places where mosquitoes will breed. And if the temperature warms up and we get occasional rainfall that keeps those temporary pools full, the mosquito population will explode. If either one of those conditions isn't met, it'll be bad, but it will be okay. If it goes cool, then the mosquitoes won't develop as much. And if there's not as much standing water because we don't get periodic rains, or if it keeps flooding, then we won't have mosquitoes. So in true scientific fashion, the answer to your question is, it depends.
All right. And your personal observations so far?
A couple of mosquitoes. And wow, they're still here. And you would think, as low as the mosquito populations were last year and as tough as the winter may have been, they are survivors. You got to admire mosquitoes that can take a whole year off and bounce back when the weather and the conditions are right, which is true of all insects, of course, that they can go through bad periods and bounce back just fine.
Well, I will try to remember to admire them when I'm getting eaten alive this summer. You can join the show at 866-780-9100. I'm talking right now with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. Richard Geron will join us in just a few minutes, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. And of course, you can join us as well with your questions about plants or insects, 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is also the time of year when people start getting on pest watches. And what are the pests that you're keeping your eye on this summer as the growing season gets underway?
Well, of course, we've sort of come through probably what's the worst of the tick season, and ticks are like mosquitoes and other insects. It depends on where you were, whether you thought it was a bad year or not so bad. They're highly variable from place to place. So we've been through the tick season. We're into the garden season. The gardens are up. So now we're watching for cucumber beetles feeding on our melons and on our cucumber vines. We're at that time of the year where the squash vine borer moth could be laying her eggs in your squash stems. So we're thinking about that one. The sweet corn is barely out of the ground, so we really don't have very many problems there to be thinking about yet. But things are off and running. In spite of the rain, I've been surprised the number of aphids on trees. And that's not a big deal unless you have to park your car under one of those aphid or scale-infested trees. And then you get all the sap on top of your car. But the trees will be fine, but it's been surprising how many aphids are out there on the trees this time of the year.
And, of course, there are the more charismatic pests that, that we watch Japanese beetles? When will we start to know?
We've got another 2 to 3 weeks for that one. It's usually the end of June before we see Japanese beetles. And I think of it as kind of a 4th of July celebration that these brightly colored beetles come out to help celebrate the nation's independence with us by feeding on our linden trees and crabapple trees. So we've got a little bit of time yet for that one as well as some of the other things that hit their full stride in middle of the summer. But on a happy note, last night I saw my first firefly.
Nice.
So lightning bugs are out. I don't think it's going to be a spectacular year for them, but because of the drought last year, they were probably impacted by that. So my prediction is we may not see as many fireflies, but I have seen my first one, and that's always a good sign that all's well with the world.
All right, and we've also been on emerald ash borer watch for more than a couple of years now. What is the latest?
We are still looking around the state. The traps are up. The investigations are ongoing by the Departments of Agriculture and by the Department of Natural Resources and through our county extension offices. All of the trapping, all of the investigations done in the past indicate the emerald ash borer is still only known from the far corner of Alamakee County. So way up in the northeast corner of the state, in the northeast corner of the county, are the only places that the emerald ash borer has been found. And that's good news for the rest of us. It moved 2 miles in 2 years on its own. So keep that firewood in Illinois. Don't be hauling it to Iowa. And we hope we dodge that bullet for a long time to come.
All right. Well, let's see if we can slip in a call before we go to our break. Mary is on the line from the Quad Cities with a bug question for you, Donald. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I agree with Donald that we have an abundance of fungus gnats in the Quad City area, but we also have another kind of gnat that bites viciously, itches, and raises huge welts. And I'm wondering what that gnat is and what we can do about it, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mary.
There are a few biting insects. Usually if it's black flies down along the river, people don't use the word gnat. They use the word black fly, even though they're also known as buffalo gnats. So there are the biting gnats that come out of running water down along the river. So that would be one possibility. And then there are some other biting midges that people react to differently. And most of these are all aquatic insects. They're coming out of the river. They're not necessarily coming out of the standing temporary impoundments the way the mosquitoes will, but they will be out of those. And there are no good remedies for these biting gnats and biting flies. Try the different repellents, talk to your friends, see what works for them. But the repellents that are on the market were specifically designed to interfere with mosquito host finding ability. And flies and gnats tend to use a different mechanism for locating us, and they're not as easily repelled. So good luck with that one.
All right, and we do have a conversation going on about home remedies for gnats on our Facebook page, so you're welcome to add your 2 cents worth there, and maybe you'll discover the new cure for your problem with gnats on there as well. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. It's Horticulture Day. With me, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us in a moment, and you can call 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. And with us now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And, of course, you can join the conversation as well at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can also post on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. First up is Ray on the line in Mason City. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I called a couple weeks ago, and I found out the answer to my problem. My peonies, my neighbor was out spraying for dandelions.
Okay.
I want to know if there's something I can do to save them for next year.
Yeah, my guess is they'll be okay. Most of your perennials can tolerate some damage. You might see some twisting, curling, but they'll tolerate it. They'll survive, and probably should be okay next spring. So basically do nothing at this point.
Is there anything he can do to protect them if his neighbor sprays for dandelions next spring?
Well, In the spring of the year, when you have the new growth is very sensitive to your broadleaf herbicides. You might suggest to the neighbor to do it in the fall, because fall actually is more beneficial, more effective, so, and it should not harm the perennials at that time of year.
Okay, and maybe if he coordinated with the neighbor, he could put up cardboard boxes or something. Would that be a good idea?
Well, what they probably could do would be to go out there immediately and maybe wash off the herbicide. If you had like a hose or something, just wash it off.
A good heavy watering after. Mm-hmm. All right, Ray, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Teresa in Ames. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, I heard you talking earlier about the fungus gnats, and I recently bought some herb plants at the grocery store, and they came in with fungus gnats. And I eventually I couldn't put pesticide on because I want to eat the plants.
Uh-huh.
So I threw them away. How can we get rid of fungus gnats when they get in the house? I don't know if they get into other plants, maybe down into the sinks.
We're talking about a couple of different things here now. If you have an occasional gnat in the house, you dispatch that with the rolled-up newspaper, which is why most of us still subscribe, I guess. But if you're raising gnats in the house, the solution is to modify, eliminate, somehow change the breeding site. If you have a slow drain in the house, a shower that you don't use very often, the floor drain in the basement, you could have fruit flies developing in the slime inside the drain, for which we have to clean out the slime. And that's not drain cleaner. That's a mechanical action or a biodigester to get rid of that slime. If you're raising fungus gnats, which are much longer and slender body than fruit flies, if you're raising fungus gnats, it's probably an overwatered house plant. And what we do is need to let the surface of the plant dry out before we add more water, and make sure water is not sitting in the saucer under the plant. So less watering, let the plant dry out between waterings, is how we avoid fungus gnats in houseplants.
All right. Teresa, thanks a lot for your call. And can you, if you have them flying around your house, I know we've talked about capturing fruit flies in the past. Is there a way to lure the fungus gnats into a trap?
Maybe light traps would work if there was some way to sort of suck them in and drown them after they were attracted to light, but that would work at night. Generally, no. They just seem to be everywhere. They're not as attracted to fermenting fluids as are the fruit flies. The little Drosophila, the little fruit fly that we remember from genetics experiments, the one you see flying around your bananas, they are highly attracted to fermenting plant sap, which is another definition of wine and vinegar and some other fluids that we can use for a trap. But that's going to be less effective for fungus gnats.
All right. And next up, let's go to Phil on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I have a mature bur oak tree and a new swamp white oak that I just planted this year. And something seems to be eating the leaves. And I just heard your comment earlier about the aphids, and I was wondering, does that sound like that might be what it is, and is it a problem?
No, I don't think aphids would be your problem. If you use the term eaten, it implies to me that the leaf tissue is gone. Aphids are sucking insects, so they just sit on the leaf after it's expanded, and they feed on the sap, but they don't chew up the leaf and make it disappear. Now, something you can look up online and see if it fits your situation is a condition called oak tatters, T-A-T-T-E-R-S, oak tatters. And, of course, tatting means to make lace. And oak tatters is a condition which describes that the leaf has turned lacy, in that parts of the material are missing, the leaf may be expanded, there's this little strip of material along the edge of the veins, and that is caused by the environment. It's not an insect pest, and that environment can include herbicide residues that are floating in the air. And herbicide residues that are floating in the air at the time the leaves are opening and vulnerable can cause these leaves to be deformed. When that happens, you just wait and the tree grows out of it, because those leaves are never going to change. But new leaves at the ends of the twigs should be emerging normally, and the tree will be fine. So your new tree needs tender, loving care. Richard's always talking about mulch and water during the dry spell. But beyond that, an insecticide will not help.
Okay, thank you. That sounds like what might be happening. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Phil. Richard, did you have something you wanted to add?
We have been seeing that on some trees this spring, on some hackberries, on some oaks, and even some maples. And when you look at the leaf, you swear something has eaten that leaf or parts of it, but actually it just didn't form normally. So
interesting. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100, or you can send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also post on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. And Beverly in Mystic has a couple of questions. First, about 3 months ago, we purchased a small Meyer lemon tree. We plan to keep it in its original pot for as long as possible. It's covered in little green lemons. Most are about the size of cherry tomatoes. Now and then, one of the smaller ones will turn yellow and fall off. So actually, three questions. First, what causes that?
Well, it may be just thinning itself. Fruit trees, if they're bearing a heavy crop, will tend to kind of remove some of the fruit because there are simply too many.
Okay. And then she says, when flowers appear, tiny black beetles attack them, but there aren't very many beetles, so we're able to pick them off. They haven't prevented lemons from forming. What are these insects, and how do we keep them away from the blossoms?
Wow, tiny black beetles. Too many choices to narrow that down, but one that would be attracted to pollen and nectar and sweet-smelling flowers would be the sap beetles, and there's lots of little tiny sap beetles that are attracted to sweet-smelling things, so that could be it. I think if you can keep up picking them off, that's fine. I think your other choice is going to be to screen them away from the flowers or the tree, and that's not going to be very easy either. Spraying is not what we would suggest for this particular pest.
All right. And then her final question. Once again, my husband is suffering terribly from chigger bites, yet I wear sandals and shorts, walk in the same areas with my husband, and have never had a chigger bite. Is it something about our body chemistry?
Must be. The other thing about chiggers is they are highly isolated, that you could be standing on what's referred to as a chigger island, and 2 feet away, I could be standing in the same lawn and would not be in the area where that egg mass hatched. So it can be just random luck. But if you've spent a lifetime and never had chiggers, whatever you're doing, you're enjoying incredibly good luck. Keep it up.
And I find that mostly chigger bites occur when I'm sitting on a lawn or something like that for a long period of time, not so much when I'm walking around, but
I think that's right, too. And chiggers are related to the number of small mammals that you have in the area, the chipmunks and rabbits, squirrels and so forth, and also more likely to be in areas where there's high moisture, like at the edges of the woods, the edge of the trail, not so much out in the bright sunshine where we might pass across the lawn. But yes, when you do sit down in one of these chigger islands, they have plenty of time to crawl around and find a secluded area to begin injecting their saliva into your skin.
Yep, and you regret it for a long time.
Yes, you do.
All right, John is on the line next in Fairfield. Hi, John.
Yes, hello. I wanted to make a comment and ask a question. I'm from Texas, Fort Worth, and people up here think they got a lot of bugs, but boy, in Texas where it doesn't get really cold in the winter and doesn't kill their larva, boy, they come out everywhere, cockroaches, mosquitoes, and so forth. And then I wanted to just ask a question on it. I'll take my answer off the air. It's been my experience, and it could be skewed, that fruit flies don't come from outside to the fruit. They come from out of the fruit. Their larva is in the fruit, and they're born there. That's my experience, and I would like to get an answer on that, and I'll take my answer off there. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call, John.
We don't often hear from Texans, do we? But this is great. Well, you're right. Regional differences happen, and there are bugs all the way to the Arctic Circle. But as you move south and even go past Texas down into the tropics, you're going to see more insects and more kinds of insects, including some things we think of as tropical, like cockroaches. Fruit flies can develop in fruit that is standing on the tree or hanging on the vine or still out in the garden. But generally, that fruit has to be cracked in order for what we call fruit flies here in the upper Midwest. The fruit fly that we have had until just a couple of years ago, our typical fruit fly, Drosophila melangaster, will only attack produce that is already cracked and already overripe and fermenting and getting in there. Now, when you get to Texas and California, you have more kinds of fruit flies that are able to penetrate developing fruit and lay their eggs. The change in Iowa about 3 years ago is we now have an insect pest very in isolated areas called the spotted wing Drosophila, which will allow that fruit fly to lay eggs in intact fruit. They saw an opening and lay their eggs on the inside. So the Texan is right that the produce can be infested in the field, but for an upper Midwest person, that's not the usual problem, but that problem is coming for us too.
Okay. Something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
Rick is on the line next from Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I have an ash tree question. We had about a 20-year-old ash tree that was in good shape, except it was cracked down the middle. And about 2 months ago, we had it chopped down so that it wouldn't take out our lines in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And the stump is about 3 inches above ground. And before we decided to have it ground out or not, I now have about 6 sprouts, all of them about the size of my thumb, coming out of the bark at the base. And I'm wondering if that's an ash tree starting to come back up again. And if it is, should I try to pick out the best one and trim off the other ones and let it grow? I know it has a hell of a root system.
Yeah, those are suckers. We have a live tree. We have a live root system. So they are producing suckers. It's possible that if you selected one, it could develop into a good tree. But on the other hand, the emerald ash borer is coming, and I think I'd probably remove that tree and put in maybe an oak or a maple or a linden or something of that nature.
It's risky to try to invest time and energy in an ash tree at this point in time. The other thing about those suckers, isn't there a higher chance it will break off?
Well, if you were to select
one okay,
and allow that to grow, it might develop into a tree. I've seen it where it has done that, and the tree was fairly good. But on the other hand, I think a different tree would be a better choice.
Right. Invest your time and money in something that's going to last longer,
right,
potentially.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. And let's go next to David on the line in Grimes. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I live in Grimes, and I have a celebration maple. It did not survive the drought last year, and our lawn has a pretty good slope and a pretty heavy clay soil. What would be a new tree to maybe put in its place, and is it too late to plant?
It's not too late to plant. You can basically plant anytime during the growing season for the most part. They're typically bald and burlapped or container grown. As far as a clay soil, I might look at maybe a linden, possibly a honey locust, possibly an oak, maybe a bur oak or a red oak. And when you plant those trees, make sure that you don't plant too deep. We typically say that the upper one-third of that soil ball should be above the surrounding terrain when you're done planting, and then you kind of slope the soil down to the surrounding areas. And also dig a hole quite wide, about 3 times the width of the soil ball. So you have some loose soil there initially, which allows the roots to grow into it much better.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, David. And we'll go next now to Jen in Sac County. Hi, Jen. Jen, are you there? Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Oh. Well, I just, you know, I have beef cattle and sheep. And, like, the dandelions are not a bad deal. They are very nutritious.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I had the NRCS come out and graded my pasture. And I was scored higher because I had dandelions. So I think people should not get all freaked out about dandelions.
All right, so a pro-dandelion call. And, of course, they're great for pollinators too, right, Donald?
Well, sure. In fact, one of the questions we had on the radio sometime back was, what plant can I have to help pollinators very early in the season because we don't have a lot of things blooming at that time of the year. And one of the plants that would help pollinators early in the season is dandelion because of how early they do bloom. So there is an advantage to them. There's a time and place for all those things. And as we have always said, being a weed is in the eye of the beholder.
All right. And let's see if we can get to one more question before the break. And this is from, oh, there, my screen just went blank. It's all right. It's coming back. This is from Cliff in Iowa City. I want to plant a berry hedge of blueberries, blackberries, and currants. Can I still plant these as the weather heats up, or would it be better off waiting until fall?
Well, I think I would go ahead and plant at this point if you can. With the blueberries, you're going to have to amend the soil because they need an acid soil. With the raspberries, with the currants, the gooseberries, you don't have to do that. But with blueberries, you do need an acid soil, so you will have to work in some Canadian sphagnum peat moss into the soil to lower the pH. But I'd probably do it as soon as you can. Keep them well watered this spring, and hopefully they'll be in pretty good shape by winter.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, and Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. They are here to answer your questions about plants and insects. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's get through a couple of email questions here. This one is from Larry in Alden. I've seen tree seedling leaf damage from a small insect seen on the underside of leaves. It is caterpillar-like, smooth, white, about an inch long, and 1/16 to 1/8 of an inch in diameter. It munches and leaves. No apparent permanent damage to seedlings. What is it, and is there something I should be worried about?
Well, if there's no permanent damage, then no. We'll try not to worry about this one. In the meantime, we will ponder the myriad possibilities of that from that description. And if it's on a variety of different trees, it's probably a variety of different insects. But a vocabulary word that comes to mind from that description is sawfly. Sawflies are a type of wasp that produce larvae that feed on plants of various kinds. And being on the underside of the leaf, the way he described it, and sort of the dimensions, lead me to believe that sawfly might be a possibility, one of the hundreds of species that feed on trees in Iowa.
All right. And another email question. This one's from Danny. I spotted a bug in my yard I had never seen before the other day. Upon investigating, we identified it as a red-headed ash borer. Mm-hmm. We do have an ash tree in our yard, and it has a few dead limbs. Is there anything we can do to help protect the tree if it has been attacked or to keep it from being attacked?
Well, prevention is the only thing that really works for borers, and red-headed ash borer is a very common one. It's one of the longhorn beetles, but the antennae aren't quite as long as some of the pictures would suggest for that name. And it has these very long, thin legs, which make it a little different. And then a red head and a red thorax, from which it gets its name, red-headed ash borer. And in spite of the name, it attacks a wide variety of hardwood trees that are dead or dying or under stress. So keep your ash tree trimmed up. Keep the dead limbs pruned out as best you can. Avoid any injury. If it does turn dry and that tree needs water, be sure to provide that. If you could mulch the root zone, that would be an additional option for us. But by and large, established trees are going to take care of themselves and only need the minimal TLC from us to be good and healthy.
All right. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones at 866-780-9100. This is from Andrew in Dubuque. We have to deal with a lot of fish flies, and some have started to emerge. What do you think it's going to be like this year? Could they be affected by the high river levels?
One of the things that surprises me, and I've never lived on a river, is that in spite of floods, in spite of low water levels, the fish flies, or mayflies as they're more technically known, will still be there. They will be there year after year. They will continue to emerge in spite of the floods. So somehow those nymphs and larvae of the aquatic insects that live in the mud at the bottom of the river just hunker down and stay in place while the water is flowing over the top of them. So we have fish fly or mayfly outbreaks in various years and various abundances, and we always have some, but it seems to vary from place to place. And the answer to his question is, we'll have to wait and see.
All right, you let us know, Andrew.
That's right.
All right, next up, Max is on the line in Lehigh. Hi, Max.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a very large oak tree that has about a 3-inch limb that sticks out over a trail that I mow. There's debate in my family about whether we can trim it at this time of the year. I say no, we should wait until the winter.
Okay.
What would the correct answer be?
The correct answer is to wait till winter. That's the best time.
You're the winner, Max.
So the reason being, there is this concern about oak wilt, which is spread by a sap-feeding insect, and the insect is quite active right now. And so in the winter months, obviously not a concern. It's not there. Now, if you did it today or this week or whatever, you could immediately apply a latex house paint to the surface of the pruning cut, and that should prevent the insect from coming to that wound. So you could do it if necessary.
Okay. Thanks a lot, and I really enjoy the show.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Max. Next up, let's go to Helen in Ames. Hi, Helen. Helen, are you there? I think Helen may have stepped away from the phone. You can call us back, Helen, if you hear us. Paul is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Paul.
Yes, thank you. I have some, last spring I planted some butterfly milkweed, and now I only have one left, and it seems to be succumbing to the same thing that happened to the others, where, you know, four stems come out of the ground, and one starts to wilt and looks like it's dying from something that's causing this, and then the other stems then eventually get the same symptom and they die, and I wondered if that's an insect or what is that?
I have no idea. I would guess it's not an insect. Those are native to Iowa. They do very, very well typically. If the plant appears to be wilting and dying, then that would suggest some type of root problem. But I'm not sure exactly what that would be offhand.
Okay. Yeah, it starts out with one stem, and then a week later another stem gets the same symptoms, and then the whole plant then succumbs.
Hmm. Transplant failure comes to mind, Richard. Is that a tricky one to get established from plants?
It can be. It has a taproot, and it's very hard to transplant or move. It's very hard to divide, so it can be kind of tricky initially, but once it's established, it's very reliable. So,
okay.
But keep trying. Well, it's a very valuable plant to
have. Yeah, it's a pretty plant, but yeah, I'll keep trying. Thank you.
Would he be better off trying to plant it from seed?
I would plant small plants, make sure it's a well-drained soil, plenty of sun, basically ideal growing conditions, and it should survive.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call. And next we'll go to Harry in Iowa City. Hi, Harry.
Hi. I enjoy your show, and I got some information last fall about our hibiscus plants, about having it blooming during the winter, and it did such a wonderful job. But now we have some yellow spots on the back of the leaves with a kind of a sappy type liquid on the back. And I'm wondering what that is.
Well, it doesn't sound like scale insects. The yellow discoloration doesn't really fit the scale insects that sometimes attack houseplants. What about leaf senescence old age, Richard?
Possibly. Are there any flying insects around, like white flies? Or
No, no flying insects. It's just the spots on the back with the sap. When you touch it, it's real sticky. And it's only on the back of the leaves.
Boy, that would typically suggest something was there, like an insect, because If it was senescence, they would simply turn yellow and fall off, but you wouldn't have the sap associated with that. So I'm not sure.
So this is one where you could take a photo of the underside of the leaf. We haven't talked about how you can continue to get diagnostic help through the week, and a photo sent to insects, plural, I-N-S-E-C-T-S, insects at iastate.edu will help. Is your email address hortline at iastate?
Correct.
Hortline at iastate.edu. Pick one or the other. If we don't like the question, we'll forward it to the other person. But that's one way, maybe seeing a photo of this, a nice, clear digital image that's emailed to one of our two email addresses would help, either hortline or insects at iastate.edu.
All right. And Helen is on the line now again in Ames, so we'll go back to her. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
Hi. What is your question?
My question is the same. I've got curl leaf on my celebrity tomatoes. I wonder what the problem is.
Okay, you have curled leaves?
Yeah. Okay. So I always plant celebrity tomatoes, and this year one plant, the leaves are curling.
Okay, have they rolled up?
Yes, kind of rolled up.
Okay, tight.
Well, they're not that tight yet, but they're going to get there.
But they're still dark green.
Yes.
Okay, it could be what they call leaf roll, where the leaves are perfectly shaped, but they simply roll up very tight usually.
Uh-huh.
It's a physiological problem associated with the weather and soil conditions. It's usually temporary, and the plants are okay. You don't have to do a thing.
Oh, good.
Tomatoes are sensitive to broadleaf herbicides, but with herbicide drift, you see twisting distortion of the leaves. And so if it's just rolling, then I would assume a leaf roll.
And yeah, that's what it is.
And not to worry.
Oh, good, because I love celebrity tomatoes.
Should be fine.
All right.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
We'll have some nice hot weather for those tomatoes as well. Thank you for your call, Helen. Next up, let's go to Jenny. Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi, I was wondering if it's too late to plant asparagus. I've got some seeds, and I know that they take 3 years before you can eat it, but so I just wanted to get a jump on it now.
Well, it's kind of late. You could try. My suggestion would be to buy plants next spring and plant those. Get a head start, and I would choose a male variety. They're more productive, like Jersey Giant, and plant maybe next spring, like April. But as far as seed, you can still do it, but I think I'd prefer the actual plants, the crowns.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jenny. And next up, let's go to Annie in Iowa City. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm calling because a couple weeks ago, some very strange creatures, I guess I would call them, started growing in some evergreens in our backyard. I don't know what type of evergreens they are, but they looked like alien pods. They were these bright orange, looked very squishy with about 20 tentacles growing out of them.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, like the children's toy that you can throw on the window and it would stick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
We know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Right. Those were probably red cedars or junipers.
Okay.
And what you're seeing there is the fruiting structure of a fungus, cedar apple rust.
Okay.
Which goes from the cedar to the apple or crab apple, and then from the apple or crab apple back to the cedar tree. And so in the spring, when you have the wet weather, this growth grows very rapidly. It's kind of gelatinous. It's kind of orangish brown. And that's the fruiting structure. It's producing spores. And the wind carries the spores to the apples and crab apples. And then they infect the foliage on the crab apples and apples. And then you see these yellow spots on the foliage of the apples and crab apples. Then they produce spores that go back to the cedars.
And no harm to the cedar trees at all.
Not really, no.
No.
But they are kind of interesting looking, very, very unique.
All right, Annie, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question on email from Jennifer. What's a good treatment for bugs that are eating the leaves on my chili plant, green pepper plants, and tomato plants?
Oh, I don't have a good answer to what that might be on green peppers right at this time of the year. One of the things we might like to do is spend time looking for cutworms. There's a climbing cutworm that in this time of the year will climb up and chew large holes from the foliage of lots of different plants, hostas and flowers and vegetables as well. So what we might need to do is spend some time in the garden at night with a flashlight to see if it is this climbing cutworm. If it is, when you find it, you'll grab it and squash it, and that will take care of it, and you won't have to spray at all. All-purpose garden insecticides, we're still using 7 after 50 years. We have broad-spectrum pyrethroids in the garden centers for a variety of insects, but we really like to know what it is before we spray. And on peppers, if they're growing well, if the damage isn't too severe, it might be the plant will tolerate the damage. The question is, can we tolerate the damage and put up with it while we're waiting for the peppers to ripen? So a little more investigation, broad-spectrum insecticide if you must, but let's try to find out what it is first.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Frank is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Frank.
Yes.
Hi, what's your question?
I put in a little waterfall and had some little ponds around the bottom, which is an excellent breeding ground for mosquitoes. When I see the little whittlers in the ponds, what can I put in it to kill them before they turn into mosquitoes?
You could put in a dip net. You can dip them out on occasion, you know, every other day or so. Just go out and sort of sweep them off the top. At the garden center, you can also find something called mosquito dunks or a mosquito larvicide. These are often they're a pellet or they're kind of like a small donut that you can put in the water that slowly over time releases a bacterium that causes the mosquito larvae to get sick and die. So that's an organic way to treat in that particular case. I would not use oil in a waterfall or a garden feature. Sometimes in ponds, they would treat the surface of the water with an oil to smother the mosquitoes. But I would try mosquito dunks from the garden center.
All right, Frank. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Dell in Cedar Falls. Hi, Dell.
Yes, I have a red bud that was a gift from Arbor Day Foundation about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And it got off to a pretty nice start after I planted it on a southwest exposure. But last spring, that would not be the one just passed, but a year ago, it was really slow to bud out.
Okay.
However, there was a sucker growth around the base of the thing that seemed pretty aggressive.
Okay.
So I just waited. And eventually the wood budded out, and very nice growth.
Okay.
This spring, about the same thing has happened, but nothing on the old wood.
Okay. So nothing on the original tree, just some foliage on the sucker.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I would probably cut off that original tree because apparently it's dead. You could wait till the end of the month. But apparently that original tree is dead for the most part, and I would remove it. Red buds are native from Iowa down to, like, Louisiana, and their hardiness is related to where the seed came from. And I wonder if maybe this tree is not that terribly hardy here in Iowa, so maybe it's going to struggle and not do very well. If that's the case, buy a tree that was grown from a northern seed source. Should be much hardier in Iowa.
All right, Dell, thank you so much for your call, and we are out of time. Richard Geron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron. Donald Lewis, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Glad to be here.
Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis, and of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical assistance today from Jason Burns. I'm Charity Nebbe. On Monday, we'll be talking about social media etiquette on the show. This is Talk of Iowa.